don't want to offend.
What if they misunderstand?
I'm scared to say what I feel.
What's wrong with me?
They're
going to
see what they want to see.
Everybody else seems fine.
Just say it.
This is Jen Slumack. You're listening to the podcast, Just Say It, a show that aims to highlight the commonplaces among us. As we amplify a variety of voices, conversations, and questions, we hope and move together toward Dr. King's beloved community. Thank you for tuning in. Renee Howitt is the founder of a nonprofit child advocacy organization, COPE 24, Changing Our Parenting Experience. She's also an appointed member of Missouri's Task Force on Children's Justice and the Critical Event Review Committees. She's authored two books, Whose Best Interest and Fosterhood. She's co-authored a Bible study, and that's called Family, It's Complicated, a Bible study of adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, in Genesis. She's the creator of several programs, and she has spent the last 12 years speaking across the country. Renee would like the opportunity to speak at your event, your school, or your church. We'll give you more information about how you can reach her to do that after our conversation. I'd like to start by introducing to you Renee. Hi, Renee. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Tell us, if you would, the mission of COPE 24.
Our mission is making parenting education a national priority. The longer version of that is that we believe all students in all high schools should be taking parenting and our child development during their high school careers. And somehow we've got to make that a priority. In my mind, it's only secondary to the core subjects, which is the whole reason we have our educational system. Now, the pushback will begin, you know, my kids don't need that because our home's healthy, it's functional. Great. You know, we know that at least 36% of our families are very healthy and functional. What you don't control, parent, is who your child's going to fall in love with and have a baby with. And now what wasn't in your family suddenly is in your family, you know, and what we have to be teaching to kids is that's important. That's really important because there's nothing that's going to make dysfunction rise to the surface faster than a crying, screaming baby.
No kidding. Yeah, that's the truth. You tell the truth on that one for sure.
Yeah.
Now, I know there's a lot of people in my audience who have never heard of ACEs, so I'd like to introduce that real quick. Now, this is from the Center on Developing Child at Harvard University website. It says, ACEs is an acronym for Adverse Childhood Experiences. It originated in a groundbreaking study conducted in 1995 by the Centers for Disease Control and the Kaiser Permanente Health Care Organization in California. In that study, ACEs referred to three specific kinds of adversity children faced in the home environment, various forms of physical and emotional abuse, neglect, and household dysfunction. The key findings of dozens of studies using the original ACEs data were, one, that ACEs are quite common, even among a middle-class population. More than two-thirds of the population report experiencing one ACE, and nearly a quarter have experienced three or more. Two, there is a powerful, persistent correlation between the more ACEs experienced and the greater the chance of poor outcomes later in life, including dramatically increased risk of heart disease, diabetes, obesity, depression, substance abuse, smoking, poor academic achievement, time out of work, and early death. It goes on to say that toxic stress explains how ACEs gets under the skin and can trigger biological reactions that lead to those outcomes. Patients were asked 10 questions. Did your family experience divorce? You know, did you ever see your mother often or very often pushed, grabbed, slapped, or had something thrown at her? Did a parent or adult in the household often or very often push, grab, slap, or throw something at you? Did you live with anyone who was a problem drinker or alcoholic or who used street drugs? Anyone who was depressed or mentally ill? You know, you look at this originally and you're just like, yeah, probably not a lot of people. But it's amazing that the numbers are so high. And so it's so important that we talk about it.
Yeah. And the more you talk about it, the more light bulbs go on even in your own head.
So to my listeners, if you want to understand this better before we go on, I encourage you to go to the show notes. I've included a video. It's a primer on ACEs. It's 5 minutes long, and it will really get you up to speed on what we're talking about for the rest of this episode. What Renee is doing is proactivity against the social issues. Okay, Renee?
So I started, and I did this whole presentation for about 2 years on ACEs, so many of the people that I present to do know about ACEs. So fortunately, I grew up in a family with very few ACEs. No family's perfect, but that's not my background. My background also isn't through the academic world. Of some 20 years plus ago, we had two children wound up on our doorstep on Christmas Eve night, two different Christmas Eves, the same two kids. And we helped that family for 3 years, trying to get the parents back on their feet. And by spending a lot of time with these children, I was seeing things I knew I should not be seeing. I'm a mother of three, and at that point had been a stay-at-home mom. And it just tears at your heart. After about 3 years of us supplementing their income, my husband getting the father a really good job, us finding them a place to live and putting appliances in the home and then caring for their kids, it became obvious to us we were just enabling these adults who were professionals. These were not uneducated young kids. They actually were older than we are, and just continue to make really bad choices. And so my husband went over to them and said, look, you are going to lose your job. Your employer has called me. And you are going to get evicted from this home because we're not going to pay your rent anymore. And we don't want anything bad to happen to the kids. So what he suggested was you two go off into the wild blue yonder, figure out your lives. Let us keep your kids. If you never get it together, you know one good thing you could have done, you provided for your children. And if you do get it together, you know right where to come and get your kids. And so he was not so kindly kicked to the curb. And the next day was when I called the child abuse hotline in the state of Missouri. And I said, look, I want to report this. I'd like you to investigate this. And if you see what I see, we will be a resource. We're willing to foster. We're willing to adopt. But you have to walk us through this. And that phone call ignited a four-year fight for these kids. They were 3 and 5 years old when I made the call. There will be three rounds where the children come and live with us for extended periods of time. And then we always have to give them back to this mom that I know isn't any better, because through our relationship, I knew that it's the generational cycle. Like, I could never even be mad at this mom because she was raising her children exactly the way she was raised. And her parents were raised exactly the way the grandparents had raised them. And so you see this cycle, and it always occurred to me, these mental health problems that I see are bound to show up in these two children who are totally healthy, happy, and really smart kids. So could we break that? Could we break that cycle if the system would just allow this to happen? And of course, the system really is about reunification, and I'm not here to voice an opinion against that. I get why they do that. I didn't at the time. But when we had to give the kids back the last time, they were 7 and 9 years old. They are now almost 21 and 23. And much of what we anticipated would happen has happened, unfortunately.
Okay. If you don't mind, I'd like to stop you there and go back and give the listeners just a little bit of context.
Okay.
First of all, if you could tell us what ACEs are, and then you also spoke about, you said that, you know, when you had these kids in your home the first time, you saw things that you knew weren't right. You know, you'd already raised three kids, you saw these things. So tell us about the things that you saw, if you could. And so go from there.
Well, some things were subtle, like behavioral, and I don't mean behavioral when they were at our home and they were playing. I mean, like when you take a four-year-old back home to their parents and they never want to stay, ever. Like, you can see them tearing the blinds out of the windows, trying to get back to you. That's a real red flag, because children want to be with their parents. Some of the things kids talk about that they shouldn't know about. You know, just those sorts of things. I can't say that it was physical, like bruises, not things obvious like that.
Behavioral. And things,
pardon me?
It was behavioral.
Yes, behavioral. And you may suspect it if you hadn't raised children, but because I had raised, and I was raising them. I mean, when these children were introduced in our life, our children were between the ages of 7 and 14. So we were still in the midst of it. And toddlers we weren't that far removed from having toddlers. So I was very familiar with how toddlers should behave.
Right.
And it was that kind of stuff that we were seeing. And then some of the things that the parents would just talk about, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, just bringing up stuff that you would never have to, like the preschool teacher is doing this, this, and this. And it's like, well, that's just to protect your child, you know, just little things like that. And then I of course knew there were problems because the mother was very open about her childhood, about the abuse from her mother specifically. She never really said anything negative about her father. She said her father died when she was very young. I don't ever know if that's true or not. I mean, he could have just left for all I know, because what I came to know was part of her problem from her ACEs was that she was a habitual liar, one of many. So you kind of had to, had to figure it out, you know?
So how did you come across adverse childhood experiences studies or ACEs?
It's funny. I didn't know about that until like maybe 2013 or 14. So we went through this whole experience. Now, we've helped them for 3 years. We fostered on and off for 4 years. So that's 7 years. And then the book that you mentioned is released. The book is about that story. It's Who's Best Interest, because it's really about the system and how the system works. And that book opened up doors that I didn't anticipate. So that's where the appointments came from to be on the Children's Justice Task Force, which, by the way, 35 states in our nation have a task force like that. And then the Critical Event Review Committee was a subcommittee of that. And so then I was working, and every once in a while I'd hear a mention of ACEs, but you know, we're in the middle of the country. We're the Midwest. We're not the most progressive. So what's happening on the coast, it takes a while for it to get to us. And so about 2013, 2014, I started hearing this terminology, ACEs. I actually got a random phone call from somebody from the ACEs Connection group who had heard about COPE 24. And she didn't call me about ACEs, called me about my work, and then started talking about ACEs. And it was that phone call that made me think, I'm going to check into this. So I just Googled ACEs. So then I asked my contacts at Children's Division in Missouri, and they said, oh yeah, we make everybody that works for Children's Division go through trauma-informed training. And I said, I want to go through that. I want to see what that's about, what you're doing, because obviously we know that the trauma-informed training is a result of what we learned from the ACEs study. So that's kind of how I came into the world of ACEs. I did like that I went to that training. I saw a big need for it to be better, but of course I learned a lot from it. And it
what did you learn? Tell us a little of what you learned in a trauma-informed training.
Well, I'll tell you, the best example that I can give you is all of the people in this training were actually those investigators and caseworkers that go knock on the door. And they were trying to get this group of people to understand that you could be called in the middle of the night to a home. And just because children are living in a situation that is dangerous, they need to be protected. So if the police get a call, a 911 call goes out, there's domestic violence, or we think there's drugs being traded out of this home or whatever, and they go to this house and it's maybe the middle of the night, and they go in and they see guns, they see drugs, they know right away something's, so they ask the adults to step outside. Maybe there's all kind of people there, you know, whatever. So then they're going to walk through the house and they discover children sleeping in their beds. Okay, somebody's got to do something about that situation. Now, what they were trying to get these people to understand is that you're there to help these kids, but you have to understand they're going to be further traumatized by being woke up in the middle of the night by strangers, even police officers in uniforms, and being put their coats on, put them out in a car, drive them to another location with more strangers, which would probably be child welfare office. Child welfare is going to try and get a hold of these emergency foster families. Somebody's going to show up, put them in another car, trying to get people to understand that while we're trying to protect kids, we can also be further traumatizing them.
Yeah, and it's so important on so many social service levels and in education, as we'll get to in a minute. But it's so important that the folks dealing with children understand that, because, you know, from an adult perspective, we are trying to do the right thing for little people. But mostly what we're dealing with is we're dealing sort of in anger toward the other adults that aren't caring for the little people, and not realizing that our anger at those adults who are failing the children, that will elicit more trauma if we express that in front of the child. Or if in some neighborhoods we bust into a house, and even as an officer, like, the presence of an officer can traumatize children in some areas. It's not, you know, officer friendly in all neighborhoods. Like, some of these children have seen their father dragged out of the house by an officer.
Or they've been taught, you know, because the parents, sometimes parents know what they're doing is just absolutely wrong. So they got to make the other people the bad guy. And so if you've been taught police officers are the bad guy, whether it's been shown or not, and it doesn't matter who the adult is, if you wake up in the middle of the night by a total stranger, you're going to be scared. And yet we've got to protect these kids. The other thing is that children that are growing up in dysfunction, and even sometimes severe dysfunction, that's the only thing they know. They don't know that this isn't normal, healthy behavior. They still love their parents. It's the biggest thing I learned through fostering these children, that children who grow up in dysfunction and abuse and neglect still love and are loyal to their parents. And if you ask them what they want, 99% of the time, they'll tell you, I want to be in my home with my parents, in my room, my toys, my neighborhood, my school. That's what they want. So they don't have the language to say, I want my parents to just grow up and take care of me. They don't have that language skill, but that is really what they want. You know, you have to let these children talk to their parents, because the goal is to reunify them. Then there are visitations. And of course, each visitation is like a party. You know, the parents are going to bring everything that they can afford to buy, and it's gifts and it's cupcakes. And so in a child's mind, mom and dad are better. It's better now because they're just naive, you know, and you can't, as the caregiver, say, oh no, even if you know they still have problems, you can't say that to a child.
Well, yeah, and that's part of the trauma informed, right?
Yes.
Because those parents are these children 20 to 25 years later without an intervention.
Yes. Yes. And it's hard to get, when you think about this as adults, we don't want people telling us where to park our car, to quiet down, take your dog in, it's barking and I got my windows open. We don't want adults telling us what to do on any level. Can you imagine how parents who grew up in dysfunction, they're raising their children and in their mind, they're raising them normal. And then you have other adults come in and say, no, 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 you have to do it this way. Can you imagine what that's like? I mean, there's going to be headbutting there. You just can't avoid that. You know, I was really excited to be appointed to the task force. The task force is, it's a network of people that are appointed, and you have stakeholders from across your state, whatever state it is. And there are select groups of people that are represented. So there's going to be judges, lawyers, prosecutors, defenders, GALs, CASA, CAC, juvenile officers, detectives, pediatricians, nurses, you know, everybody that has their hands in this, including child welfare, are represented at the table. Foster parents. There can even be former foster children that serve on the committee. There's these positions. And I remember thinking, wow, I'm going to get a chance to really make change. And when I went to the first meeting, I thought, oh my God, nothing's going to happen here. And these people have all the education, all the work experience, and I don't see any motivation or any energy. Because if you haven't been the one that wakes up in the middle of the night with a child that's not just having nightmares, but night terrors, or wets the bed way beyond bedwetting age, or one of our two children would wake up in the middle of the night with blood just gushing out of his nose, and there was nothing physically wrong with him. That's trauma. And when you haven't had to live with that, there isn't this sense of urgency. And so I didn't see that. And I woke up very soon after my first meeting with this thought, I need to go and share what I've learned, the little that it is, with our high school students, because in 20 to 25 years, they are not only our parents, but they are also the leaders of this nation. They will be our judges and our lawyers and our doctors. And so I'm like just wanting to plant some seeds. But I also stayed connected to these two committees for the full 12 years. I just turned out in March because I knew that's how I could continue my education. So what if they weren't going to do anything? I am. I just hadn't figured out what it was going to be yet. So as I went into the schools and started speaking, it turns out teachers love guest speakers, and I sort of had a knack for speaking. That was a God thing. And there's a group of teachers that teach parenting, child development, family relations, adult living, health. They're called family and consumer science teachers. And the minute they found out about me, I started getting requests from across Missouri. Literally for 6 years, I would leave my house on Sunday night and not come home until Friday night, just going from school to school speaking. Wow. And then it was the neighboring states. It was Illinois, it was Kansas, Kentucky. And then it just got so that there was no way I could do it. You know, I would have been flying all over the place. So it occurred to me, now, what do I do? Because as one human being, I can't possibly get to every school in just Missouri every year. And eventually I'm just going to be old. You know, I started this when I was 50. And so that's when it occurred to me, videos, videography. You know, we can create these, and we can create them in a way that better suits students. So we started doing these, this Elements series. Actually, okay. The first thing we did was the COPE 24 Parenting Skill Program. Now that, I think you'll find kind of humorous, because the family and consumer science teachers, I started running this idea by them, but I said, you have great textbooks, you have great supplemental material, but I don't see anything that's reality-based. And they're right. Like, what do you mean? And I said, come on, every parent, their babies cry. If and I used to tell kids this when I was in the classroom, if you ever find an adult that says, oh, I just love listening to a baby cry, get away from that adult. There's something wrong with them. Okay. Nobody wants to listen to a baby
right.
cry, or the tantrum, or the potty training, or my personal parenting favorite was bedtime. They yeah. never want to go to bed. And so my idea was, why don't we do like 5-minute vignettes of those parenting situations and let each one of them escalate to abuse, neglect, or dysfunction. So the teacher would start a class and just show that 5-minute video. And then as soon as it peaks, stop it and turn to the class and say, now, what went wrong? What other choices did the
Great.
Parent have? And what will you do? Because there is no one right answer, just as there's no one wrong answer.
Right.
But getting kids who are growing up in dysfunction to see, oh, there are other ways to do this than the what I'm seeing in my home.
Right.
And kids that are growing up in healthy homes, they yeah. need to know everybody's not healthy. And what we know from ACEs, you got like a 64% chance of falling in love with somebody that's coming from dysfunction.
Yeah. So and the truth is too, you know, we could define what is healthy a million different ways.
Right.
And so
teachers, educators, administrators, you know, child welfare, lawmakers, even people in the medical community, they're all going through this trauma-informed training. So now that you've had that, okay, now what? You know, so much of what goes on in families isn't the definition, the legal definition of abuse or neglect. It's
right.
dysfunctional. So right. when you think about if the adults are yelling and screaming at each other and calling each other names and belittling each other, and a child is listening, that's not illegal. It's just dysfunctional.
That's
if
right.
we yell and scream at our children and call them names and belittle them, not illegal, but it's dysfunctional.
That's
getting
right.
a divorce, not illegal, but it's dysfunctional for the child's life. Having a mental health issue, not illegal, but it's dysfunctional. And drinking and getting drunk, not illegal if you're 21, but it's dysfunctional. And that is 5 of the 10 ACEs.
That's
so
right.
my point when I speak now is, much of even what goes on in the ACEs world is not illegal. It's just dysfunctional. And when you have that constant dysfunction in a child's life, it shapes how they view themselves and others and the world.
That's,
you know,
right.
And that's why it goes to the next generation.
And that's so important. And I think it's critical that we start to talk about it that way also, because what we're not trying to do with the ACEs movement is demonize parents for failures.
Right.
What we're trying to do is recognize and acknowledge that children experience life differently. My screaming at my spouse because they forgot to put gas in the car and I've got a job interview in 10 minutes. I'm not an awful wife or an awful parent when that moment occurs. I'm human.
Right.
And sometimes those moments of humanity processed by a child who doesn't have life's context.
Right.
They experience it as trauma.
Right.
That's all we're saying.
Yeah.
And that trauma can interrupt their developmental process. And so we have a responsibility as capable. I mean, we were given this incredible brain,
yeah,
right, to critically think.
To understand that emotions inform thinking, which informs our decisions, which ultimately becomes our behavior.
But we have to be willing to understand how the whole machine works.
It's so true. And, you know, how many of us aren't guilty of having said, well, I did that because I was mad?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have to rise above that eventually. Okay, I made that mistake, but it's not okay to do something unacceptable because you were mad. So we have to grow up. We have to emotionally
grow up.
And
yes.
Part of it is being able to, and I have to tell you, I wouldn't have partnered up with these family and consumer science teachers if I hadn't been convinced over that 6 years that they get, you can't be sending home teenagers to tell their parents they're idiots. You're doing it the wrong way.
Right.
That's
yeah.
not a good plan.
Right.
Okay. So we can teach them, and they have successfully figured out how to teach these kids, like open their minds. There are other ways without, and teenagers are a tough group because they're all mad at their parents anyway. I can't tell you how many kids have described my sister's doing this to her kids. My brother's doing that to his kids. And then later in the class, they'd come back and say, well, child welfare showed up and they just took their child away because she was brushing her hair too hard. And I'm like, okay, you can see it right there. You want something to happen for your niece or nephew or cousin, but we want it to happen the way we want it to happen. And that's not the way child welfare works.
Right. And that's human nature. You know, the human nature of I belong in my tribe and I have to defend it.
Exactly.
You know?
And so I can be mad. How many of us have ripped on our brothers or sisters? But the minute somebody else at school does it, you're ready to throw punches.
Yeah, of course. I got you. I hear you.
Yeah, that's just human nature. And so I tell kids all the time, I tell this when I'm with adults, look, we have some really big decisions to make in our life, starting with high school. Do I finish it? Do I drop out? Do I go to college? Do I join the military? Do I get married or do I stay single? Do I take this wonderful job and move across the country with this great opportunity or stay in my home base? Do I have children or not? That decision is the biggest decision you're ever going to make. And so many of us in this country act like, oh, it's a baby. Oh, it's no big deal. It's a huge deal. It's the biggest game changer of your life. And the whole definition of fun changes when you bring a child into your world. Life as you know it changes. The definition of fun changes. And if you're not willing to accept that, the kind of fun we have without children, you can't have that kind of fun with children. You know, and if you're not willing to make the fun child-centered, then there's going to be problems. And that doesn't even mean you are breaking the law, you know, and you can be wealthy or poor, you know, a very wealthy family that leaves their children to go to all of their functions every single day or do whatever it is they want to do every single night because they can afford a nanny or some kind of care for their child. Nobody's breaking the law, but the child wants their parent. And so we have to understand parenting is a huge responsibility and
that's
nobody
right.
forces us to become parents. We don't really give that a thought and we teach that and don't even know that we teach it. We send our children off to preschool and what's the first thing that grandma or grandpa says? Oh, do you have a little boyfriend? Do you have a little girlfriend? The unspoken message is you grow up and you get married. Well, maybe not. And then, you know, and the other unspoken messages along the way about then you have children. Well, maybe not. You know, maybe that's not a good idea for me. But we just, those are givens. And now knowing what we know about child rearing and how many people, you know, just really can't adjust. So, you know, I get that. Like, I had this child. I thought this was going to be different. I'm frustrated. I really don't like this. Okay, so how come you keep having children? You know, those are the things that bother me, is that we don't recognize. And I guess because I was a competitive athlete for years, part of being a good competitor isn't as much as the athletic ability is recognizing what is your opponent doing and you adjust to it. And so you have to do that. And so what I tried to teach kids is you need to attack parenting like you do a sport or anything you want to be good at, whether it's being an artist or a musician or even a gamer. You know, you want to be the best at that. So what are you doing when you're not doing that activity? You're thinking about it. You're thinking about, boy, I was bad today. I lost. Why did I lose? What can I do better? Or I won, but I probably shouldn't have. What do I do to get better? What did I do that was really good?
Right.
You should go to bed every night saying, how did today go? How am I feeling as a parent? How are my children acting? Are my children happy? And if all of the answers are negative, the parent has to change. The child can't.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that that's a skill set. And I think that it's one that oftentimes children who grew up in dysfunctional homes that were never intervened upon become the adults that don't have that skill set, that don't have the capacity to ask themselves, why isn't this working? That don't have the capacity sometimes to say, one child didn't do it, so I'm not going to have sex again, because the sex is not intended to have a child as much as that sex is intended to fill a need that wasn't filled in their childhood of belonging and being held and being seen.
Right.
So children become the byproduct of adults seeking out the needs that never had been met.
Right.
And now we've got children who aren't being raised. Right?
Yeah.
And so this thing is rich.
It's big, and it's almost, you don't want to almost overwhelm people, because I mean, I could talk for an hour on several different things you just said there, the word intervention. And I think one of the interventions that we haven't really explored as seriously as that we should is that we have this wonderful source, these family and consumer science teachers that are trained professionals in teaching parenting and child development. And that's a wonderful form of intervention too. It is something that all of our students should be taking, because more than 80% of them are going to become parents. And the other less than 20% are still going to be in contact with children.
Of course.
Through their neighborhood, through their families. You still have to have an understanding. You know, if you don't have any children and this child's having a breakdown at the table next to you in a restaurant that you otherwise would have been irritated, maybe you won't be so irritated when you understand that the parents only control so much here.
Right.
You know, the documentary ideas, typically the work that I did on the critical event review. So that is cases where the worst has happened. A child has either died or been so severely injured, they're never going to be healthy again. And the federal government wants the task force to do these case reviews because they want to know why that would happen. Because this isn't like a random 911 and this family was never on the radar and now a child's dead. This is a family where there's a case open. There's judges, there's lawyers, there's CASA, there's all these folks working on it. And yet the worst has happened. And so as we reviewed those, and I've done it for years, you see this sort of long, short list of repetitive parenting behaviors. And so that's when it occurred to me, well, since we're dealing with the target audience of high school students, we could take one element at a time, like immaturity, our mental health, or drugs and alcohol, or ACEs is more broad. But as I was doing this, because we did one on shaken baby, which always happens because of crying. That's the first one that we did. I believe that's one form of child abuse we can all but eradicate with just a little bit of education going out to all of our students. Like, this is so simple. You know, as teenagers, you push your parents' buttons, you push, you push, you push. And you know, every one of you knows when you push your parents' last button, what do you do? And they'll all tell you, I I go outside. I go to my room.
I run.
I get away from them.
Yeah.
The baby can't get away from you. So you have to get away from the baby. It's that simple.
Yeah.
That's simple. And then we did one on immaturity, which focused on teen parenting and support systems. So do you have a support system? And if you don't, what are you doing? You're teenagers. We know what you're doing. What's your plan? You know, what is your plan if conception happens for you and for the baby, if you don't have a support system? And then we did drugs and alcohol and parenting because of the opioid crisis. And many of those people, we don't hear that die of these overdoses, their parents as well. And so then through all of that, each one of these videos takes us about 2 years from a conception in my mind to creation. And so during that 6-year period, I was learning about ACEs and thinking we need to do this. And I was watching the handful of ACE videos that were out there to see what they were doing, how they were addressing it. And I just wanted to show this like a card game. Like, how many ACEs are you holding?
You and I have spoken briefly, and I understand that you are, this is a tool that you put into the hands of the family and consumer science teachers to use in their classrooms to educate high school students about ACEs. I know that I've watched it, and it's really well done. And I also have to say that as somebody with a high ACE score myself, I would have to take this film in doses. Mm-hmm. I would have to take some of it like in modules almost. Here, let's listen to just a little bit of the introduction.
This isn't a game. For too many children, it's life. It's the hand they're dealt, and the deck is stacked. Some kids hold too many ACEs or adverse childhood experiences. Too much trauma, abuse, neglect, too much dysfunction. ACEs add up, and the cost is high. No one wins.
So could you tell us, first of all, what is the percentage of students experiencing ACEs in classrooms typically that might have exposure to this film, and how is it being used?
So it was just released. It's not even been out. It's just been out a month. So
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate what you say, because I don't statistically know how many students in every specific classroom. The ACE study was very accurate, and that was middle class. So we haven't added, average was 64% of us grew up in a home with 1 to 3 ACEs. So if you use that percentage, 64% of the students that would see my video would be in that group. And then we know 12.5% were 4 or more, which is really where things can go south pretty fast. The stresses of poverty are homelessness. So I appreciate what you're saying. What about that group? We can't be fearful. They have to know what we know. They shouldn't have to wait till they're, you know, 40, 50, 60 years old to understand what the trauma in their life did to them. So teachers are aware of what's going on often by time high school. That's our target audience. So be aware of that. Discuss with the students before you show them. I always tell teachers, you need to preview anything of mine that you show. Because I have middle school teachers that'll write and say, can I show this? I'm like, you know what? You need to watch it. You need to run it by administration. And I would strongly suggest if it's middle school, you send out a letter to the parents so they have an option to opt out. That's okay. But high school students are already engaging in some of what we know as ACEs. So if I have anger management problems with my friends, when I get mad, do I yell and scream? Do I cuss at them? Do I shove them up against the locker? Do you really think you're going to treat a baby any different? You know, if that's how you handle anger, are you going to handle that any differently? Are you already out drugging and drinking with your friends? It may not be an addiction yet, but you think that's just going to stop because you bring home a baby? Because here's what happens. You bring home that baby and you realize that baby doesn't know what I'm doing. So I just continue it. And by the time you realize this child does it is an addiction. You know, so some of our students already have mental health problems and they don't even know it because of the trauma that they've went through. You and I know that most mental health trauma that people are struggling with in their adult life, we can trace that back to what went on in their homes. I know the brain is an organ in the body that can malfunction just like any organ. That is not to say every mental health problem came from bad mom and dads, but I'd be willing to put everything I own on the line to say, I'll bet 80% or more could be circled back to what went on in your home.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be illegal again. And the level of trauma is how I receive it. The child receives
it. That's right. Everybody's
agency level is different.
That's
you know, my best friend talks about the trauma in her childhood home all the time. And she has sometimes little patience for people who make these bad decisions and blame it on their childhood. And I say, you know, Debbie, you are an extremely resilient person. Everybody's not wired like that.
That's right.
And we don't control how we're wired.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I appreciate what you're saying. That what we are talking about, but that has been the pushback for me since we released our parenting skill program, which was just those 5-minute vignettes. Well, what if a child's been traumatized? Well, so we're not going to teach them?
Well, I also really appreciate, Renee, what you're saying is that we've got to tell them what we know, because I'm a huge advocate of, I think, you know, we need to do more truth telling. You know, we have to talk about the things that we're not supposed to talk about. We don't have to live in them. We don't have to promote them, but we need to acknowledge that life looks differently through the eyes of different people. Right. And we need to speak about, and that's why I do my podcast, and it's still evolving into whatever it's going to be. But I think it's so critical that we hear stories from the experience of people that we may not cross paths with in our day-to-day life. You know, just to remember that this is a big world. And
yes,
there's a lot of pieces and things happening in each individual life that have to do with the cocktail of the child's temperament, the child's DNA, the child's environment, the environment outside of the home, right? Stress, yep, versus toxic stress. You know, I can have a home that's not functioning well and then leave my house and go to a safe place like a school or a friend's house, and that will help me be more resilient. But if I have a house that's not functioning well and I walk outside and I'm scared of my neighbors or afraid of gunshots or don't know what I'm going to eat today, or I'm ashamed of what I haven't, you know, my clothes haven't been washed in a week, like, then leaving the house is not a safe place.
You know, it's funny. I try to tell the audiences that I speak to that these 10 ACEs are adversities, are adversities that were studied specifically because parents absolutely should have control. Now, because of their own ACEs, that's what we didn't know in the past, but they should have control of these things. There are many other adversities that can happen in life that parents have absolutely no control over, like a hurricane, a tornado, a car accident, a diagnosis of cancer. And you can be growing up in this trauma and also have those uncontrollable events as well.
That's right. That's right. And I think that one of the greatest outcomes of the work that you're doing and the work that I intend to do, and I think to some degree I'm already doing as I'm speaking with you, but I think one of the greatest outcomes can be that as we begin to recognize the prevalence of ACEs in our society, then we as individuals might be willing to take a look at our own situation in terms of ACEs. And when and if, and the, you know, 64% of your average classroom, as you said, is 1 to 3 ACEs, right? So that's 64% of anybody who's gone to school, I think, that can expand into that percentage, right?
Yeah.
We've all had 1 to 3 experiences. And I think one of the quickest ways that human beings dismiss people who are sort of identified as an other, like those people, when we do that, we're often doing it because Don't you know about me? Don't you know about my pain? Don't you know what I've been through? Don't you know how hard I've had to work? Don't you know? I can't worry about them. They're not, their pain, they need to deal with it. I dealt with mine. They have to try hard. I tried hard. And we get into this instead of getting into, I had an incredible home. I had parents who loved me. I had parents who worked. I had parents who were sober. I had parents who did this. And I have a score of 2. Or 3. And I have struggled and I have needed more affection from my parental units than I've received. And as I recognize that that has been my experience, can I instead find compassion?
Yeah.
Rather than judgment. Can I find compassion rather than judgment and begin to honor other people's journey in a way that allows us all to heal?
Yes,
yeah, separate more.
I agree with you 100% on what you're saying. And as I've watched the anger erupt across our nation, much of it is justified. But the point I want to make, and I have a grandson because of some trauma that he went through young. I mean, it was so bad when he was 4. He was expelled from 2 preschools in 30 days.
Oh, bless his heart.
Because of what I know, I was able to sit down with my daughter and the rest of the family and say, look, we can address this now properly and all get on the same page so that if we can't get it under control at age 4, we won't have it under control when he's 14. So we got to do this. And it ain't going to be well in a month or 6 months. This is going to take time to get this right. Well, he's
and a village.
Yeah. And he's now 8. And we had this conversation just recently about anger. And I said, you know what? There's nothing wrong with getting angry. It's a normal human emotion. That's it's right. How we react. And so what we see in our nation today is so much anger, no anger management, no critical thinking. It's just going off the deep end. Well, it got me thinking. One of the things I have talked to people about for years is parents need to do 4 things. They need to provide, protect, nurture, and love. And if one of those elements is missing, there is going to be a problem with your children when they become adults. Okay, so if I am just an angry person, I still am providing for my children, I still am protecting my children, I still am, you know, sitting and reading and hugging on them, I think I'm loving them, but if I'm angry at everything, and maybe justified, maybe horrible things happened to me as a child, but you are teaching your children to be angry and nothing bad's ever happened to them. We have to be aware of that. It doesn't mean that it's unjustified that I'm angry and I need to resolve those issues in the adult world, but we shouldn't just naturally pass that anger on to children.
Well, and we do that also with resentments and yes. complaining and gossiping and talking about those guys. And, you know, we've got so many devices in our society that work to, you know, separate us.
Yes.
Right. But we have this capacity to see over that construct and embrace each other. We have the capacity to do that if we can see, like, so just to bring this back in before we end today, we started this conversation with you becoming aware of all of this because of 2 children who were left at your doorstep. And it's when that relationship begins, when a human being is in relationship with a problem that they had not seen before or with some sort of this abuse, when that a relationship comes into our life, suddenly we are invested.
Yeah.
And thank God for that.
Yeah.
Truly. And also, what if we chose to invest?
Yeah.
Before it was put in our life? What if we chose as a way of living to pretend like that could be my child,
yeah.
to pretend that, you know, that poor parenting could be my child or my sibling or something. And like, what can I do here?
Yeah.
Is there anything that I could do here?
Right. Yeah. Certainly awareness. One of the things I've been talking a lot about recently is what makes an idea in your mind or my mind or anybody's mind actually become a movement. And it becomes a movement when we're successful in getting people who otherwise didn't care or didn't know to actually care. And now we have a network of people that are talking about this. That's really what I'm trying to accomplish. I'm saying we have this problem. Child welfare has proven that they can't get ahead of this on the back end, waiting for a child to be harmed, and now we'll move in, which is how we want our government. We don't want our government stepping into our homes when there's no problem. So they have to wait for that. And what I'm saying is that we know that we keep getting further and further behind the eight ball. So I'm saying we've got to make this a priority in our educational systems, which were 99% of our kids, you know, are going to at least go to freshman year or sophomore year. So if we get the kids then, now I realize we have a percentage of kids that drop out and you would miss them in their junior or senior year. But if you do this freshman, sophomore, and let's face it, in this day and age, they have a lot more information than we had. They know what's going on. And so we just have to make this a priority. Sometimes it does. A bomb has to be dropped on you and God has to motivate you. Sometimes I think, because I am a believer, that God has put these opportunities in all of our lives.
Yes.
And either out of fear, we just shut it down. Like, I don't know where that's going to take my life if I made this and went on this, and we're just afraid of that journey. And, you know, you have to make those decisions. We just made the decision. And believe me, my husband's not on the same journey as I'm on. You know, he's went for another cause, which is just as well, but he supports me completely in what I'm doing. And I support him in what he's doing. This touched my heart in a way so deep that it could only be God,
Yeah. You
know, and we all know on some level that children are abused and neglected. We know that child welfare exists. We know that people foster and adopt. We all know that. But thinking that we understand the magnitude of this problem, because we know that, is like saying, because I drive a car, I understand the engine. When in my case, I couldn't even pop the hood.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love talking with you, and I love what the listeners won't see when they listen to this episode is they won't see the passion in your eyes and in your body language. I'm very moved by the work that you do. I'm very grateful for it as one who has, as I said, a high A score myself, but also a lot of post-traumatic growth. You know, I've grown a lot. I've done a lot of personal work to get where I am. And I know that we can, but I also know that, you know, I've always kind of been a survivor, and some people just don't have, you know, some people need others to hold them more than,
you know, if I can, we talked about this a little bit before when I started out and I was looking for people to participate in this video project on ACEs. Some of the professionals that I wanted for commentary, you know, they'd want me to have a piece on poverty or on homelessness or on violence or on bullying or on, you know, buffering. And so we couldn't do everything,
right,
you know, mainly because you can't overwhelm students. And ACEs, there's 10 of them anyway. So that's kind of overwhelming right there. And so we had to reduce that down. Education is my main message. I'm trying to get that out of my generation doesn't get it. Your generation doesn't get it. Then hopefully our youth, by the time their generation will get this, she's right. I might be dead and gone, but eventually somebody gets this. We need to make this education a priority. And so we did go off on a couple, but we just couldn't do everything. And we chose to talk a little bit about buffering, which is what you talked about. You chose to talk about today. Children have to have that one healthy person, whether it's a next door neighbor or it's a teacher or it's a school environment, someplace that they go that is healthy so that they know. Now, they still don't know that everybody doesn't go home to dysfunction.
Right.
But at least there's some window opening there. And then we talked about bullying. And we wanted our students to understand bullies are sometimes kids that have been traumatized, and sometimes kids that have been traumatized at home will be the victims of bullying. So they have this being traumatized at home, and then they go to school and they're traumatized again. Mm-hmm. And so we hope that that helps, because there is a big push to try and eliminate this bullying situation. And I thought it was, I mentioned it because I thought that it was great that out of all the things we could have talked about of other trauma, you chose buffering too. And that's what we chose. I mean, it's a huge issue.
Well, I think it's a big, if people are willing in their lives to say, what can I do for the greater good? What can I do for these neighborhoods that don't have the resources that my neighborhood has? What can I do that would be useful and not that I'd have to leave my whole life for, or that I'd have to abandon my family for, or like, what can I do to serve humanity in a way that would be useful? We could all mentor somebody.
Yep.
Pick one child and be a healthy presence, a nurturing presence, a loving, a protective person in their life.
Yeah. You know, something simple like, you know, we're producing this, we've produced a Bible study, we've produced this video. And I've always said, we know that 20% of our population goes to church regularly. Just going to your church and saying, you preach on family, you preach on would you be interested in showing this video or doing this Bible study?
Yeah. Can we talk about it in these places? Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't have to just be in our schools, because we do want people all over the country to see this and then think about the potential. How could you utilize this in a group setting? And like you said, identify your group. And if they're struggling, then stop it. Talk about it. You know, reconvene next week and do another segment of it. It doesn't all have to be in one setting.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, Renee, I can't thank you enough for being here and sharing your time with us and sharing with us all of the work that you're doing. For anybody who's interested, you can find out more about Renee and all of the work that she's doing at her website, www.cope24.com. She'd be happy to talk to you about the opportunity of speaking at an event, at a school, or at a church. And her mission is
making parenting education a national priority.
That's right. Thank you so much, Renee.
Thank you, Jen.
God bless.
This has been another episode of Just Say It. I am your host, Jen Sthumak, and I want to thank you for coming by. I encourage you to go to my website, www.soulnotskin.com. Tell your friends if you enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you next time.